We turn to Detroit News columnist Daniel Howes for our weekly Thursday check-in. And Daniel, the theme for today's conversation certainly seems to be the day of reckoning is at hand for Detroit.
Yeah, tomorrow at the Westin Hotel at Detroit Metro Airport, emergency manager Kevin Orr is going to make his pitch to about 150 representatives, pension funds and bondholders and banks and unions to say, this is what we're going to want from you. And these are the kind of concessions. And it's probably going to be plus or minus somewhere around 10 cents on the dollar, which is going to be very hard for a lot of people to swallow. That number is going to go up probably through negotiations. But this is confirmation that the day of reckoning is here, that Detroit and its leadership can no longer kick the proverbial can down the road. It can't borrow any more money as a practical matter, and it's running huge deficits and is technically insolvent. And I think a lot of people think that this is clearly the precursors to a Chapter 9 bankruptcy filing, because nobody really expects that Kevin Orr is going to be able to get the agreements with all of these various parties in advance of a bankruptcy.
So tomorrow's session is really a spelling out the facts session versus a bargaining and negotiating session?
Yeah, it's really his opportunity to present the plan. And he's very explicit about he wants everybody to get it at the same time. He wants everybody to hear the same message. In fact, they're not allowing people to take in cell phones or other kinds of mobile devices so that they can't tweet and they can't make phone calls and they can't do other kinds of things and communicate with the rest of us on the outside until everybody hears the same pitch. And I think he's going to talk about the state that the city's really in, what their proposal is to get it back on track, what services are likely to be privatized, what assets may be put up for sale, you know, the entire comprehensive approach, turnaround approach for the city of Detroit, and tell the creditors, and this is the role we need you to play. My understanding is that in a situation like this, the representatives of creditors typically do a lot of listening. They've done their own analysis. They've looked at the publicly available numbers that we've already seen of the city of Detroit, the financial reports, Kevin Orr's 45-day report. They go through this, and a lot of them make an assessment about where they are and what they think they can get out of this, and also what they're willing to agree to. And in some cases, you may have financial institutions that have already written their loans and their credit lines to Detroit totally down to zero. So any recovery that they would get would be gravy, whether it's in a pre-negotiated settlement or in a bankruptcy. So each one of these is going to have a different way of looking at them. I think a lot of people feel that the biggest stumbling block in all of this is likely to be the two public pension funds, whose vested pensions are protected under the state constitution. And I can't imagine that they would agree to some kind of settlement in advance of a bankruptcy, because then they would expose themselves to lawsuits from their own pensioners.
You know, I stop and I think of those pensioners, and I think of retirees who gave the city their working years and with the expectation of pension and health care benefits. And what do you in your heart of hearts believe will be the outcome for these retirees?
Well, I think this is truly uncharted territory, and there have been bankruptcies in other states, municipal bankruptcies in Alabama, California, right. Rhode Island, to name three, and they all have had different impacts on the pensioners because the state laws are different. In the case of Michigan, you have the constitutional protection for vested benefits, and I think a lot of people just don't know how state law is going to mesh with federal law in a bankruptcy court, and the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, which limits the ability of a federal official, in this case a federal judge, to essentially dictate state law. This is truly uncharted territory. I think there is a feeling out there among the bankruptcy professionals that these vested benefits may not be as sacrosanct as pensioners have been led to believe. That's unfortunate, I think, for them, clearly. But I think the other thing we have to look at here is that, and it's kind of what I wrote about today, the leadership of the city of Detroit over many years has really not been telling themselves and the voters and the residents the truth about the predicament of Detroit. They borrowed way too much money. They made promises that they couldn't keep and clearly cannot keep today financially. And now they're in a predicament where the people that are going to potentially pay are going to be retirees. by losing their health care potentially, which is not backed by any assets, unlike a pension fund. So there's a whole lot of things that are exposed here and are will be the casualties of whatever happens, whether it's a negotiated settlement or a bankruptcy or both.
You know, when walk us back, Daniel, in your view, let's talk a little history, because we use that term for many years. The leadership has been not doing what they haven't been able to embrace the realities, and they have been. How far back are we going? Are we going back pre-Coleman Young? Are we going to Roman Gribbs, Mayor Kavanaugh? How far back does this problem stem?
Well, I think you can. I think you have to walk it back in steps. Let's go back to the early days of the Kilpatrick administration.
Yes.
The last time the city of Detroit had a budget surplus was 2004. So they have not had a surplus since 2004. There have been a lot of exogenous things that have happened in terms of shocks, the recession.
Sure.
They've lost the city of Detroit, and I think I've said this to you before, has lost a third of its population roughly in the last decade or so. There is not another major city in the developed world, except for maybe Katrina-ravaged New Orleans, that has lost a third of its population. Nowhere, I can't imagine. And that speaks to the syndrome here. These are one of the reasons Detroit is where Detroit is today is because Detroiters left Detroit. And not, I'm not talking about back in the 70s when Coleman Young was mayor. I'm talking about in the last decade. And these people were voting with their feet. They were pulling their kids out of Detroit public schools. If they had options, they left. And they came into near suburbs like from Dearborn and Southfield and various other things. And they've changed, in some senses, they've changed the political cultures in those communities as well. But, you know, the reality is that this has been building for a very long time. You've had successive administrations that have cut deals with their labor unions that were very restrictive. And if you talk to people at the state and in Lansing about some of the issues having to do with labor contracts, one of the things they'll point to are things like work rules. They'll say wages are not the problem. And when you look, I've seen studies, you know, Detroit wages, for example, for police and fire are very competitive with cities of similar size and populations around the country. That's not the issue. The issue is more the total cost of those employees to the city, to the taxpayer, which takes into account pensions, work rules, and a whole lot of other things. Those are some of the problems, and those have been going on for a long time because labor contracts, by their nature, are accretive, and they build on – it's like an onion going going in a reverse way. And so instead of peeling it back, you're kind of growing it in the layers and the layers and layers, and that's kind of what you have, and it becomes very challenging. Their health care is also a huge – it's a huge number. It's somewhere in the neighborhood between $5 and $6 billion, and it's an unfunded liability. It's essentially a pay-as-you-go situation for the city of Detroit, and it's really unsustainable, but – there are people who were promised that. And I think one of the things that's going to be litigated here is, did the contracts, are they covered by the contractual language? And that's going to be different probably for every union. This is going to be the Bankruptcy Lawyers Full Employment Act. I think you can bet on that.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah, because I think about, let's say, a firefighter who is, you know, in his 60s, early 70s. He is now retired. He may be suffering lung disease after years of breathing who knows what going in there. And to think that health care coverage could be threatened is, I mean, you just think of the human toll of all of this. And there's a face for it.
There's no question about it, Cynthia. I mean, and I think that's the thing that's so outrageous about it. And a lot of people that have been covering this and writing about it for a long time have written about the political dysfunction in the city, where the overriding goals of elected officials were power and control. It was not competence. It was not managing to the resources that you had. I mean, as you lose population, you lose tax revenue. And as people leave the housing stock in the city of Detroit, the value of the overall housing stock declines because there's less demand for it. It's a very simple supply and demand equation. So that exodus has exacerbated the problem dramatically. And it's not going to be fixed by Dan Gilbert buying buildings in downtown Detroit or Campbell Ewald moving its headquarters to downtown Detroit. That will help the central business district and it will bring some vitality. But in terms of the overall health of the city, you need to get more people there, and you need to bring them back in. And I think they're going to have to look, get more radical about ways to do that, whether it's you don't pay property taxes for 10 years, as an example. You can come in, you can buy the house, you can renovate it, you can do whatever, and you don't have to pay property taxes for 10 years. But you're there. You're going into the local stores. You're paying other kinds of taxes in the city. And those are the kinds of things they're going to have to look at. But they've got to stop the bleeding, and they've got to get a baseline. But all that said, you're right. There is going to be collateral damage here, and I think that's very unfortunate, but that's really the reality of where we are. I think we just don't know what it's going to look like.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes. Always enjoy our Thursday check-ins. Daniel, thank you so much.
Thank you.